Älskar du den här podden? Stötta den genom IKAs nya supporterfunktion. Det är helt upp till dig hur mycket du vill bidra med och det finns ingen bindningstid. Klicka på länken i poddbeskrivningen för att visa din uppskattning och stötta podden.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to episode 19 of the Husky International series and a long interview with free skier Sam Smoothie from Lake Wanaka in New Zealand. I met Sam at the opening of a new The North Face brand store right here in Stockholm, and after a morning workout with a big group of people from the store, we sat down at the restaurant of Sam's hotel for the interview. My name is Magnus Ormestad and this is the Swedish outdoor podcast Husky. Find more information about this episode and previous episodes at huskypodcast.com. Husky is recorded in cooperation with Lundhags.
First time in Stockholm, I guess.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, first time.
But you arrived. You arrived yesterday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Came over yesterday afternoon. So,
First impressions.
Oh, had like the best meal of my life possibly last night.
Oh, really?
Night. Yeah.
At this hotel.
No, you went out with Erika
and.
With the Piagos, who are lovely, and yeah, we had like reindeer. We had oysters. We had. Beef carpaccio, tartar, it was phenomenal.
It's just basic Swedish meal. It's like, yeah. It's not nothing special for us, like everyday course.
It was so good. I've been eating good on this trip, but that was the best one so far.
When you are not out traveling, where is home, you would say?
Cheers, bro. Home for me is like, Wanaka, New Zealand. I've got a house there now, and it's where my family and lots of my friends are. But I kind of have like a second home in Verbier in the Alps. So,
for how long have you been going to the Alps?
I've been going to the Alps since 10 years now, I believe it is. So about that. So I love the European style of skiing and the passion they have for it, and the mountains are incredible.
Is that Lake Wanaka?
Yeah.
What kind of? Because that's the place where you grew up.
Yeah.
And you reside now. You have a house of your own.
Yeah. I went to school like half an hour down the valley. We had a house in Wanaka. It was like a holiday home, like a little batch. That's what you call it in New Zealand. And now the whole family lives there permanently, and I get about six months a year there, and then the other 6 months I'm on the road.
Growing up in Lake Wanaka, what kind of childhood did you have?
Oh, it was an amazing childhood. My parents are big like mountain people, like adventure people. So like every weekend we were off doing something fun generally, and we had kayaks. You know, in summer we'd be kayaking up the lake and camping or hiking. Winter was all about skiing. Like every day we could, outside of having to go to school, we were up the hill skiing, and just a lot of freedom and a lot of activity and adventure, and yeah, it was an incredible childhood.
You never got into kind of a phase where you wanted to rebel towards all that and like, I'm moving to a big city, I'm going to become an accountant.
Accountant? Nobody ever wants to be an accountant. I'm just not any good at anything else. I had typical teenage rebellion kind of nonsense, but it wasn't really against like the activities. It was just typical wanting more freedom kind of things and to make my own decisions. But I've always loved skiing and getting out on adventures, so that's never changed.
You've always felt at home in nature.
Yeah. I'm not really a city person. I like the quiet and, you know, a few good friends and, yeah, just pottering
village
about
life.
the outdoors. Yeah. Yeah, although I guess, you know, I get tired of small towns as well, but I get to travel so much that it kind of counteracts it pretty well.
About your parents, because your father, he was, back in the day, kind of an alpinist, wasn't he?
Yeah,
both. Like, he was really traveling the world and climbing and stuff.
Yeah, both my parents loved climbing mountains and often together, and they would, their dad went to South America 3 times, I think mum went there once. So that was always a part of like being young, was like they wanted to do the activities and to climb mountains, and they weren't very like aggressive, but they just loved being out there and, you know, working their way up and down a mountain, you know.
Where did that come from? I mean, looking at their childhood, I mean, because they grew up in New Zealand.
They weren't born with parents like me. They sort of found it themselves, and I think it was an era in New Zealand when it was like becoming more popular, that whole mountain climbing side of things, and I'm not really sure. Like, for them, I think it was just a personal choice, and that's what they wanted to do, and for them it was probably more of a rebellion thing, going away from the standard
avoiding
consumerist
the man
life, and, you know, they had like okay job, but I mean, they avoided the man and they kind of were the man. Like, my dad was worked at a bank, so he had like a very conformist kind of job, but then every weekend he could, he was off climbing mountains and having fun. So I think like a bit of both worlds.
Because, I mean, we have, I think in Sweden we have this vision of New Zealand as this land of adventure, like literally, like wilderness and adventure and mountains and so on. I guess that's really becomes like literally a part of your DNA growing up, especially if you grew up in a smaller village by the foot of a mountain.
Yeah, I think New Zealanders like to think in themselves as very like outdoorsy, salt of the earth kind of types, and I think like to some extent that's true, but to, you know, we still have like the city people and, you know, the guys that wouldn't know how to skin a rabbit if you showed them. But like, I think as a whole, like, New Zealand's maybe, I think just because we have so few people, that getting out and into nature is really easy. Like, even Auckland, like our biggest and our only real city, has like beautiful beaches, you know, amazing rugged areas like within like an hour, so it's like it's a big city, but you can still get out and explore.
But back home, when you're back home, like, what kind of like outdoor activities do you partake in? I mean, do you go hunting as well, fishing, and do all kinds of stuff?
Like, my sort of like main objective when I'm home is to try and surf as much as I can.
Of course.
I'm big into surfing now, but really love rock climbing, mountain biking, and those are like 5 minutes from my house, so it's like Wanaka's like so cool that you can just do so many different activities in one day. Like, on the way to the ski field you pass by where you go rock climbing, so you always have your climbing gear in the car, and if the skiing's no good you go rock climbing, and then you get home, you're like, mountain biking trails are like 2 minutes away, so you're in the forest for a quick couple of hours. And then you can even go to there's a man-made river wave now, so you can like surf a stationary wave. But I did just get my hunting license, well, my gun license prior to leaving. So the concept of going and foraging for my own food and meat is a kind of new thing to me, but my dad was always into it, so hopefully he's going to take me and make sure I don't stuff it up. Hopefully shoot a deer and not myself.
Skiing in New Zealand, what is skiing in New Zealand? I mean, is it common? Like, do on schools you go on field trips, or is it very dependent on where you live in New Zealand, like where you grew up?
It's pretty dependent on where you live. It's not a big sport in New Zealand at all. Like, rugby dominates everything in New Zealand, even politics. The area where I grew up, you know, you have ski trips. You know, like in high school, we got to ski on Thursdays. And then
on the schedule.
Yeah, you had to sign up for that part of the curriculum, but like it was pretty common that people wanted to do it. And but outside of the few mountain areas, like Wyman One, and there's like two other kind of ones, and which aren't that populated, so it's not really a big part of New Zealand's culture. But the skiers that are there are pretty keen bunch. Like, yeah, they sort of love like a lot of fun and don't take themselves very seriously.
What was it with skiing that got you hooked? When you got it, like, because I think I read somewhere that just like when you were just a couple of weeks old,
yeah,
your parents took you out on the mountains.
Like, yeah, I was like 6 weeks old.
Shoved you in a backpack.
Mum went skiing the day I was born. And then they went home and had a party, and she obviously wasn't partying, but Dad was, and she had to then drive the 3 hours to the hospital because Dad couldn't drive. And then 6 weeks later, she was skiing again with me in a backpack. So yeah, it was just natural to me. Like, it wasn't like any decision was made. It was just, that's what we do, is we go skiing. And
you never turned your back on it?
No. I tried snowboarding once when I was a teenager. Oh, like a couple of times, but I was, you know, didn't like being shit at it. So I was like, nah. I do go snowboarding a little bit, but I've gotten a bit better. But I was already good enough on skis that the concept of being a novice again wasn't appealing. And it was just natural. It was just always been there, and it's always been my sort of number one in my life.
Did you have like local role models, or was it like Glenn Plake type of figures?
I didn't really get ski movies in New Zealand until like the die was cast already, to be honest. So like growing up, it was like, yeah, it was like local role models, people, like kids who went to the same ski field probably wouldn't even know, like they're young now, but yeah, it was like the local guys that are like older than me and wanted to be like them, and then conversely wanted to beat them in competitions. So there's always been like a bit of a hierarchy, and that's good, you know. Like, you're always having someone to look up for is pretty good, I think, to motivate you and to learn from, you know. The kids these days are like stupid good. And I think a bit
because
of that,
they look on YouTube.
They like have like, you know, they don't have to like trial and error. They can be like, that's how you do it, and then they learn. You know, they just learn by doing and like watching, and they're just so good. And bastards.
But are you in contact with? I mean, when you go skiing back home in New Zealand, do you ski to, like, you go to your home mountain?
Yeah,
are you like
a little bit at home?
Like a role model? Do you have to sign autographs and standing in the line, or?
Weirdly, the last year or two, I do.
Who's that old man?
I do sign. Yeah, now I'm old. I do sign the odd autograph at home, which never used to happen. But mainly just kids. But it's so cool in New Zealand because it's so small that you kind of know. You still even know the kids, and you know. And I help out in like the New Zealand Junior Tour, and so like see how they're going and give them a few bits of advice. But like, you know, if they're on the right lap, you know, you just end up skiing with whoever's around. So sometimes we end up skiing with like 20 people in a rat pack, and it's like from like 40 down to like 12, you know. Like, it doesn't matter as long as you're having fun.
When you were a teenager, like 15, 16, if I had asked you what did you want to become when you grew up, did you have like a plan back then?
No, planning's never really been my forte. when I was 15, 16, I was still trying to be a ski racer.
Because you trained in a like alpine ski racing club.
Yeah, in the Wanaka Ski Club. I only went as far as like first year fizz racing and just kind of fell out of love with it. But I just think like the racing part of things, I just wanted to be like, I was very competitive at that age. But I don't think I wanted to be a racer. But I enjoyed what I got out of it in terms of technique. But yeah, I don't think even at 15 that I thought I'd be a pro skier. It wasn't really a thing then, though, like in New Zealand either.
At that point, like you did 1 year of fist racing.
Yeah.
Where was the Freeride World Tour back then, for instance? Like,
oh, there wasn't one. It didn't exist. So 15 years ago, 2000. Back then, they probably had like the free skiing world tour, like the American scene was a bit further along. And there was, I think, even maybe events in Alaska back then, which sounds pretty awesome.
Like Valdez.
Yeah, there was like the World Skiing Championship. I'm not sure how long that went for, but yeah, but so like there wasn't like this.
But it was a thing, you were aware of it.
Not really, no. as I say, pretty isolated in New Zealand, so. Like when I was like 15, I think it was about then I did my first freeride comp just for fun with some racer friends, and we knew there was the New Zealand Nationals, but that was about as far as the thought process went, you know. Yeah.
But what how you ended up like being a freerider, like where did that road start, and like what steps did you take to?
It wasn't like purposeful. It was like I quit racing because I was sick of getting screamed at. It was too regimented and there wasn't enough
from coaches.
I was like young. All the guys at my level were sort of older, so like I got screamed at a lot because they were trying to get to the Olympics and all I was trying to do was like not stuff up. But so I quit that, and then I did a couple of freeride events.
Because local like freeride, ones, like
like just local, just even just like around Wanaka, and it wasn't like I wanted to be a freerider, but just like when we weren't racing, there was only a couple of pieces at Triple Cone anyway, my home mountain. So like that was just skiing. That wasn't like we're going freeriding. It was like that was just what skiing was. It was like jumping off stuff and playing around. So I did that for like a season or two.
Did you ever feel like you had a talent for it? Or did other people tell you that you had a talent for it?
No, I think it was like I might have been 17 and like still competing as a junior, but I got third at like the New Zealand Nationals and the Open Men, and there was like guys that had like won events in Europe and North America that competing that got one and two, and I was just behind them, and I think I was like, oh, because I was doing slope style, I was doing half pipe, I was just doing everything because it was all new and it was all fun. But I think it was about then I was like, I'm maybe a little bit better at this than I am at spinning like a top, so. Yeah, but I still didn't take it very seriously for a couple of years. It was like too young and dumb.
But it was just the fun for it.
It was just
the
fun. That's the just fun what of it. I enjoyed that doing the most.
Inspired you? You don't have a competitive side? Like?
Oh, I'm very, very competitive person.
But towards others or do you compete against yourself, or that's a very cliche question, but
I mean, it's against yourself, like freeride's against yourself, kind of, but like, you know, sometimes I get pissed when I'm like, I could have just done that and won, and then that's kind of from other people, so I don't like that bit so much about competing anymore. But I was always competitive, like. And if that was just whatever it was, like it was triathlons, I didn't want to ever come second, so it was always, run till you vomit kind of thing, which is why I hate running now.
But you did that as well, you did triathletes.
Yeah, mum and dad did triathlons, so I just did them, and won all of them that I went in. But that was just because I just wanted to win. just like winning. But that's why competing in freeride is so frustrating, because it's so hard to replicate. When you don't want to compromise, when you don't want to, say, be a tactic skier and like ski, when you just want to like win every event, every time, and ski at 100% all the time, it just doesn't work very well.
And it's, I guess it's so many
variables you can't control, and it's immensely frustrating sometimes.
I mean, from the course, I mean, the mountainside, it will change from 1 hour to the next, like as the sun rises and so on.
And just like visual inspection, you don't really see everything. You only get limited like angles of vision, and then like. So sometimes you come into a feature at speed and you're like, what is this? And you're just flying into the air like, oh crap, this wasn't what I thought it was at all. So there's all those little things that still, like, no matter how much experience you get, if you're going to ski 100%, you know, you're going to make some mistakes.
Yeah.
Unless you're like Mr. Perfect, like Rainer. So I don't have that kind of consistency.
But I mean, if you Google Sam Smoothie, you will see that line in Andorra.
I do land some lines, yeah.
Yeah. Is that your style of riding? Like,
not really.
Going big or like?
I think it's my style in that it's on my limits. It was complex. There was quick turns that had to be made, else you were getting funneled the wrong way. There was like, I think it had like the full range of, I think, like ski ability. Like you had to stomp, you had to make critical turns, had to be very precise. And but I don't think it's necessarily, like I like to go fast a lot of the time, and that wasn't very fast just because you...
Maybe because you have a racing background. I mean, that's to your benefit. Like,
big,
nice, fast turns.
Yeah, and it's like harder to process fear when you're going fast because you don't have the time.
But that line, that winning line in Andorra, that must have gone like exactly the way you visioned it, because you didn't, like on some parts, you literally had like zero margins for errors.
Yeah, that was interesting. Like that wasn't like the standard for me. Like that was something special in that, like, often when I pick a line, I like to see a zone and I'm like, that's what I want to do. And I'm like, I look at other options, but I kind of generally come back to that first thing. And I saw that zone and was like, oh, I want to go in there. But it took ages to work out, and I spent way more time than normal and put way more effort in. Like, I climbed these rocks to like get another viewpoint from another, like I did all kinds of weird shit. There was like a snowstorm in the way, like, and I think just like my headspace was different as well. Like I was tired of the world tour and tactics, and almost like a little bitter, and I just wanted to like throw a Hail Mary, and it went really well. Because, which is good, because
when you left the gate, You kind of cruise closer to the cliffs where you drop in, and but you had no hesitation at all. Like you knew that the second you left the gate, you knew this is the line I will ride. Otherwise, it's not possible.
You need to make that decision. Some people are good at like changing their minds. I have not really been that good at it. I like to commit about 4 minutes out, so then I like can run through in my head exactly what I'm doing, each turn, each little marker, have it all visually mapped out in my head, watching it go perfectly. But that was one of the few ones that went like exactly as planned. So,
but is that a feat for you? Like, are you mentally? Would you say that you're mentally strong that way? The same way that you can run until you puke. Like staying mentally strong in a race like that?
I think it kind of, I can be. I think it depends like on the face. I struggle sometimes trying to force myself on smaller less exciting faces, for instance. I'm a big face, kind of like big face, or like open, fast, all that high consequence kind of stuff. But when the motivation's there, when like I'm excited about the face, and I'm like, I think I have a mental strength, and like once I decide that I can do it, just like backing myself to go 100% and doing it, and like holding to that, like despite all the delays and all the waiting around and stuff, just like I think I've worked on the years on my mental.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Skills, I think they play pretty well.
Going back to when you got into the like the international free ride scene, like this thing with getting sponsored, what came first? Did you get like local sponsorships in New Zealand before you went international, or did you save up money to go and make a name for yourself, or how does it work?
I lucked into like sponsors. They have changed, but like from about 16. But in New Zealand, it's such a small industry that it's like, you know, gear.
Yeah.
And by the time it came, I came to be like 19, 20 and traveling. I mean, at the time I had like one of the better deals. I was head to toe and I got, I think maybe 3,000 New Zealand dollars was my budget, which is about 15 euros. It's about 1,500 euros. But yeah, I would then like work jobs, like I worked so many different jobs. I would save up all my money, I'd go to Europe, I would spend it all, I would rack up credit card debt, and then I'd go back to New Zealand and I'd work all the time and pay it off, and every year it got like worse and worse. So that like I'd be paying off my debt and then leaving for Europe in a month. You know, and then like I'd be coming back and I'd like owe like $20,000, which is like was my annual income at the time. And I was just, it was like, it got to the point I was like, if I'm not making it anytime soon, I'm quitting, because it was like, it was a drain. I'd been throwing money at it for ages. So,
but then you were on the
by that point, World I got to the World Tour, yeah. And like my first major sponsor, Vocal, picked me up couple years before that, and they've supported me through all that, and they were good, but well, they still are really good.
But you like that, of course you can't say no, but did you like that part of the part of your life, like working with sponsors? I guess now it's you don't have to chase that much. You kind of you have your setup, but yeah. Do you like that part, like working with sponsors? Everything from like social media stuff to events such as this one today, and is that a what do you get from that?
I think it's cool because you get to like meet a whole range of people. It builds skills in you in terms of how to deal with people, how to work with people, all these things being super useful after, you know, during and even almost more so after you're done being an athlete. I think with my sponsors I'm really lucky, they're sponsors I really believe in, the gear, the companies, and that makes it so much easier to be happy with what you got and to like truly believe what you're saying about the product and about the companies.
Like this morning we had this like 1 hour workout with the new North Face store here in Stockholm, and on the warm-up I think I overheard you talking and you said to someone that you haven't experienced like an autumn in like 10 years or something.
Yeah, I haven't had autumn in, or a summer in I was 17.
Because I met...
12 years.
Is that a thing? Because I remember I talked to another guy from New Zealand some years ago, and he was like chasing this never-ending winter, like going from the southern hemisphere up to the northern hemisphere. Yeah. And that has been your lifestyle, or that's
been my life for over 10 years. It's like Europe, December through to like June, New Zealand like July to December, so it's always getting warmer, which is good. You know, you never get the days getting shorter, the days are always getting warmer. It's always winter or spring, never fall or summer.
Do you miss that at all?
I miss summer a lot, but I mean, now I'm in a point where I'm a bit luckier. I get to go on like a surf trip or two and have like a quick 1 month summer here and there. Because you do miss it. People are always like, oh, Lake Wanaka must be so nice in summer. I'm like, yeah, I bet it is. I don't remember.
12 years ago.
Yeah, when I was a child.
But this part, because now the last couple of years, I guess you have been traveling quite a lot, like exploring new places and all. Are there big differences? Do you see that there are big differences between like ski communities and ski culture and the, I don't know, the kind of social energy if you compare Europe to the US to New Zealand?
Oh, yeah, huge differences. Huge differences. Like, I love like the European style, how like there's like minimal avalanche control. You're allowed to go and make your own like decisions. For better or worse, you know. But then, like, the Europeans can be, like, a bit more serious. And then, like, Americans are a bit more, like... We're talking stereotypes here, of course, but, like, a lot of, like, my American friends are, like, much more relaxed and, like, ski party kind of lifestyle. Like, all really love, like, the whole thing. And I think Kiwis are just, like... way too excited about mildly average conditions. You know, there's heaps of differences, you know, like, and that's what I think it's amazing about it. Like, you go to Japan and, like, they have such reverence for, like, powder skiing and in the trees, and it's very zen-like, and then, like, you know, you go to Chamonix and it's like you're the odd guy out if you don't have an ice axe and crampons and enough rope to strangle a paddock of horses and all kinds of, like, and that's what's so cool about it. You go to places and the style's different, the culture's different. And
what do you pick up? Like, have you changed a lot, like, over the last 10 years or something? Have you become more of a European?
Yeah, like, I hate going to America, and, like, no, I mean, I love America, but I hate going there, and they're like, you can't ski that, it's closed. I'm like, why? Pretty sure I can ski it. You know, so, like, I think I've definitely, like, leaned towards, like, the European side, but I like to think, like, I still go home to New Zealand, and it's, like, 10 centimeter powder day, and I get excited with the boys. Maybe not as excited as they are, but, like... I mean, I've been so spoiled, the amazing places I've skied, but I still think some of me stayed the same, that I love being at home and skiing crap snow and having fun with it, you know?
But is that a negative side to your lifestyle, like becoming jaded, sort of, like if it's not like waist deep powder, it's, but can you still appreciate like an average day out, or like crappy weather and like white out? And
I think you can get jaded, like you get so tired and run down and hurt, or just sick of being hurt or others getting hurt and all that emotional stress. But like, I think I'm lucky in coming from New Zealand, like everyone's like, just like, bro, you're being a dick.
It's an awesome, they take you down, like, in a
sunny day. Who cares if the snow's icy, you know? Let's have fun. Hmm. And that's cool, like, you know, no one treats me different at home because I'm like a professional skier. I'm just one of the lads that goes skiing, and like, that's cool. So I think, like, it keeps you pretty level. Like, I think it's still weird to me that I'm like a professional athlete. Like, saying those words makes me want to cringe. Like, it doesn't sound like, you know, me.
You mentioned the kind of the dark side of this world, like with the casualties and the dangerous side. Does that get to you? Like, because I'm sure you have probably, unfortunately, like many friends, like people close to you that's not here today because of.
Yeah.
What does that do to you?
Makes you just want to like stay inside and not do anything remotely dangerous. It's pretty tough, like, and like the longer you're out there, like the more they kind of mount up, and it's not like they get better. It's like this. I feel like they get worse, and they feel like they're more frequent, even though they might not be. But it just kind of builds on you. This weight, and become like, it's hard to not become like fearful and scared. But
how do you handle it? Because you still have to you still go on these trips and these expeditions.
It comes back, you know. The desire comes back. It's who you are. It's part of who I am. And as hard as that is, you know, you've made your choice. So I think you just got to give yourself time and process the grief and ask those questions. Is this what I want to do? And if the answer is yes, then you've just got to make sure you're making the right decisions and those around you are, and do everything you can to make sure you come home safe. And
Thinking back,
try and educate yourself and people.
Yeah, I think thinking back, have you done a lot of like stupid decisions?
I have no idea how I survived the first few years in Europe. I don't know what an avalanche was coming from New Zealand. Like, we have like all our mountains are controlled, and like I believe since then there's been such a large scale shift to like being smarter, doing your courses, having the gear, even just like, I mean, there's still people out there making dumb decisions, but yeah, I'm pretty thankful that the friends that like showed me Europe and the ways how it rolls kept me out of trouble to a large extent, I'm here at this point.
Is that a knowledge that you want to transfer to, like, for instance, kids in Lake Wanaka?
Yeah.
And do you do that?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I've been part of, like, the junior tour there, and, you know, we start with, like, safe decision-making in terms of, like, just how you're skiing. Like, wearing a helmet, not doing things that are, like, outside your ability, and just, like, taking your steps, just evaluating safety and like trying to have that as being normal, you know, that you're like, you're not just some wild child throwing yourself off rocks. And then, you know, just having it that like, there's me, I've got my stuff, I'm like talking to the patrollers, and just like trying to normalize the whole regular way. And like when they come out to Europe, taking the ones that I'm with aside and just being like explaining the situation. And it's kind of weird, because you say some, like, you know, you have to say some kind of weird things, like, I don't want to have to call your parents. But it's like in a serious concept, because you're talking about calling them and telling them they don't have a son anymore. And it's kind of scary, and it feels like a responsibility, but I think it's important to be like, to impart that this is serious. Even though it's a lot of fun, this is serious, and they need to, even though they might only be 16, they need to treat it as their responsibility to go out, learn the stuff, ask the questions, do the work, and become a safe rider and not just some hooligan.
Going back to traveling, you have been skiing in North Korea.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a movie that's like released this week.
Yeah, it's releasing tomorrow.
Yeah.
Called it The North Korean Chronicle. And that was definitely one of the weirdest trips of my life. But such a privilege, I guess you'd say, to witness such a new country of skiing, and despite all the, you know, obvious social issues and political issues surrounding such a place.
You don't have any ambitions to become like the Dennis Rodman of the Free Ride World Tour?
I had thought I should get my nose pierced.
No, but he went to North Korea and hung out with Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it might sound like calling the kettle black, but like, I don't know, there's a lot I disagree with about North Korea.
But still, there's huge.
And there was definite doubts as to whether we should go there even.
But
or
how did we, I mean, did they invite you?
No. So we weren't, like, we paid a tour company to take us in there. They knew we were going to be filming, but it's not like we were their guests. We just went on a private guided tour, very guided tour. They only show you what they want you to see, and you don't get to see anything else. But it was a hell of an experience, and it definitely just made me like doubt a lot of, like, you know, you have these preconceptions that you don't even notice you have, perhaps. And I think it just made me try and be a bit more open, and it was a really good like learning process, because like you have no idea until you go, and we didn't see anything of the country really in terms of what the real issue is there and what's going on. But I think I'd agree to not going, because it was a lot of fun, and it definitely like challenged my views.
Well, wasn't it like super difficult like filming, like they had to check your cameras and everything? Yeah. And
well, we had like two minders with us at all times. And
were they good skiers?
No, but they were, only one of them skied, but like she was like doing pretty good for like her second day ever, I think it was, and was like really keen and enjoyed it, and it was just cool seeing people, like a whole new culture embracing skiing and just having fun. You know, you have this idea of like North Koreans, and there they are, just like normal people having fun, yeah, falling over, being idiots on snow. You know, like that's cool, like it humanizes them.
But traveling as a skier, is that a that's a nice way of traveling and experience, because you get these meetings that you wouldn't get.
Yeah, and you have like a common ground to talk on, and you know, like it's just, yeah. I think apart from carrying around like 60 kgs worth of gear, it's awesome. Like a great way to see the world and to meet people that share a similar passion. Yeah.
I think it was Kai Sakrisson, and he had this theory that people in the U.S. Tend to, like, skiers in the U.S., they see their goal is to get famous through films.
Yeah.
And riders in Europe, they, you know, they race to become famous. Like, they want to enter the, like, Free Ride World Tour to get famous.
Yeah.
And now you're kind of bridging that, because you start to enter the film world as well. But is that, do you think that's true? Like, in the U.S., writers are more focused on, like, their goal is to end up in film, big productions.
Yeah. I don't know if that's even down to the writers themselves. It might be.
The sponsors
just sort of the
might
way
have
the market and the sponsors are aligned and arranged would have a large influence on that. I mean, like, I'm a competitive person. I love competing, but, like, someone says you want to just go fire on a helicopter and ski a whole bunch of powder, it's pretty hard to say no to that, eh? You don't even have to, like, compete, you know, like, so, yeah, I think it's interesting, and I think it is kind of, like, lined up that way.
Because now you've been working with TGR as well.
Yeah, I've had one season working with Teton Gravity Research, and yeah, it was pretty mind-opening what skiing with that crew like that might be like. And
was it like? What was it like to come into?
They were like, I never felt like the new guy at all. I've known a number of them for quite a while, but never really that close. But yeah, they just were super welcoming. The most, like, professional crew I've worked with in terms of, like, everyone knows exactly what they're doing and how to do it. But then, like, just super fun as well. Like, lots of good banter, lots of laughs, lots of silliness. Like, it fit me perfectly. Like, I was really impressed. And they have a really good snow safety attitude as well. Like, spend the money and the time to, like, make sure they're, like, on point. And because that just comes down to getting the shots as well in the end, so... Yeah, I was really excited about that.
Well, can you tell me about the movie and about your sequence? Or sequences?
Yeah, the movie is Teton Gravity's 21st birthday, so it's kind of like a celebration. There's a bit of old footage chucked in there. There's some pretty funny like old hotel scenes of them being bad boys. And it's just, I just think it's a very real representation of, like, the fun of skiing. Like, it doesn't take itself very seriously. There's some super gnarly high-end action, but it's not, like, overly dramatic Travis Rice kind of stuff. And yeah, my section I'm really happy with. I did a 10-day trip in the Neocolas. They call, like, in Alaska, they call Fantasy Camp, where we're pimp camping, which is sick. And we had two helicopters, and they were with, like, Sage Catabriga, Angel Collinson, Nick McNutt, who are all, like, awesome human beings and super rad skiers. And we just had, like, the most fun you can have on Earth. And I think that comes across in the film, and we got to, yeah, just got to ski some gnarly mountains, hang out in a camp, goof around. Yeah, it was, like, time of my life.
So what's in store for this part of your winter year? Like, are you participating in the, are you racing in the World Tour again?
I've pulled out of the World Tour for 2017. My shoulder's not going to be fixed in time.
Oh yeah, you messed up a muscle.
I've fully ruptured my pec major, so I tore it off the tendon. So I had that kind of screwed back on and stitched on 2 months ago, so it's a long recovery. It's like 6 months, so hoping to be okay to film by like mid-February, but I just thought I'd take the chance to just film ski for my first ever season and see if that's gonna make me happy, and see if I can do without competing,
and perhaps put a month or two of summer in there something.
Yeah, I think because it's gonna be like my show's gonna take some time, I'm gonna get like a bit of summer in January for the first time in 12 years, so, and then I'm gonna have a pretty long winter, I think, like push into June, try and organize some ski mountaineering trips for June, and then like have a bigger than normal New Zealand winter, and yeah, it'll be good.
But thank you so much for taking your time.
Hey, no worries.
Best of luck with the recovery.
Yeah, cheers.
You can find Husky on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at the handle Husky Podcast. Husky is made in cooperation with Lundhags, and it is produced by Husky Productions. The music is made by Joel Mull.
deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.